Ravi did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In Islington North, one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, physics graduates queue up outside universities, wanting to teach in local schools that desperately need science teachers. The training programs that would connect willing graduates to empty classrooms have been cut, leaving both sides of the equation unsolved while students sit in classes without qualified physics teachers.
I grew up watching my younger sister Priya struggle with maths. She'd sit at our kitchen table in Southall, staring at equations that might as well have been written in another language. Then in year 10, she got Mr. Patterson. He didn't just teach the formulas, he showed her why they mattered, how they connected to everything around her. Within months, she was tutoring other kids. That transformation convinced me that good science teaching could change lives. After finishing my physics degree at Imperial, I spent 2 years in renewable energy consulting. The work was fine, but I kept thinking about those moments when understanding clicks into place, when someone suddenly sees the pattern they couldn't see before. I wanted to be the teacher who created those moments. When I moved to Islington North, I was drawn by the area's community spirit and the diversity of its schools. This felt like the right place to make that difference. I applied to the Institute of Education at UCL for a PGCE in physics teaching, specifically requesting placement in North London schools. The admissions team responded within a week. Teacher training bursaries for physics have been significantly reduced for London placements due to Treasury spending constraints, due to a new journal they wrote. They suggested I consider training outside London or switch to a subject with better funding. I stared at that email for an hour. Physics teachers were desperately needed everywhere, especially in London. How could there be no money for training them? I decided to approach schools directly. Surely they'd have alternative routes into teaching. At Highbury Grove School, the head teacher, Ms. Chen, invited me for coffee. "We desperately need physics teachers," she told me. "Half our Year 11 classes are taught by supply staff who aren't physics specialists, but we can't offer training positions anymore. The Department for Education has cut our allocation of training places by 60%. She showed me the letter from the DfE. The language was polite but clear: reduced capacity, spending constraints, difficult decisions. I tried 3 more schools. Each told me the same thing. There was no funding, the budget had been cut. I began to accept this. It sounded reasonable. Everyone was facing cuts. The money simply wasn't there. But I couldn't give up. Teaching felt too important. I enrolled in a private teacher training course, paying £9,000 of my own money. It wasn't ideal, but at least it was a path forward. When I went to collect materials from the UCL Institute of Education, I saw something that didn't fit the story I'd been told. An entire floor of the building stood empty. Seminar rooms that could seat 20 students each, rows of them, all dark. A security guard noticed me looking around. "They used to run 3 cohorts of science teachers here," he said. "Now it's just one. Shame, really. These rooms just sit here." I walked through that empty floor, counting. 12 seminar rooms, space for hundreds of trainee teachers. The building existed, the lecture halls existed, the equipment was still there, gathering dust. In the Institute's library, I met other physics graduates. Sarah had driven down from Manchester, hoping to find a London training place. James had been working in banking for 3 years, but wanted to teach. Elena had just finished her PhD in particle physics. All of us wanted to teach in London. All of us had been told the same thing: there is no funding. We sat around a table, 8 qualified scientists who could be teaching in schools within 6 months, comparing rejection letters that used identical language about treasury constraints and difficult choices. That's when I started to wonder. If the people existed, and we were sitting right there, and the building existed, and the classrooms existed, and the schools desperately needed us, what exactly was it that there is no money for? The government that prints every pound note was telling us it couldn't find enough pounds to train the teachers standing in front of them, ready to work. I thought about what Ms. Chen had shown me. The DfE letter didn't say they'd run out of qualified trainers. It didn't say the curriculum couldn't be delivered. It didn't say the schools had no space for new teachers. It said the budget had been allocated elsewhere, as though the Treasury was a household that had spent its weekly allowance and had to wait for more money to arrive. But the Treasury doesn't wait for money to arrive. It creates the money. Sarah looked up from her rejection letter. "My mate's school in Birmingham just hired 2 physics teachers straight into the classroom with no proper training," she said. "Emergency placements. But apparently there's no money to train us properly first." The contradiction was stark. Schools were so desperate they'd hire unqualified teachers, but supposedly there was no money to qualify the graduates who wanted to teach. I started to understand that what had happened wasn't bad luck or some natural shortage. Every closed program, every rejected application, every empty training place was someone's decision. The Department for Education chose to request less money from the Treasury. The Treasury chose to allocate less money to teacher training. Ministers chose to treat these as accounting problems, rather than political choices about what Britain should prioritise. The government that issues the currency told me it couldn't afford to issue enough of that same currency to train the physics teachers its own schools desperately needed. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. We were all there. Everything needed for training was there. Where I am now, 2 years later, I'm still teaching. I completed that expensive private course and found work in a North London comprehensive. I watch my Year 10s have the same breakthrough moments Priya had, and I know this work matters. But I also know that dozens of my fellow physics graduates never made it into teaching. They couldn't afford the private route, or they moved away from London, or they gave up entirely and stayed in their previous careers. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. What I experienced isn't unique to teacher training or to Islington North. Across Britain, people who want to work are told there's no money to employ them, while the work they could do goes undone. It's the same story in every constituency, where real people and real needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Ravi experienced has a name: cherry picking. This technique works like selecting only rotten apples from an orchard to prove that all apple trees are diseased while ignoring the healthy fruit growing everywhere else. Cherry picking involves selecting rare examples where spending failed to justify never spending, while ignoring overwhelming evidence of what happens when government does invest. In Ravi's story, policymakers cherry-picked isolated examples of teacher training programs that allegedly wasted money to justify cutting bursaries across London. They ignored the thousands of successful physics teachers already working in schools, the decades of evidence showing that proper training improves classroom outcomes and the economic value of students who understand science. Instead, they amplified rare cases of training courses that didn't deliver perfect results to argue that training physics teachers was somehow inherently wasteful. The austerity objection in this sector runs, "Look what happened to countries that overspent on public services." This cherry-picks Greece, which used the euro and did not issue its own currency, while ignoring Nordic countries with large public sectors that have lower debt crises, not higher. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. In Ravi's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The graduates existed, the schools existed, the classrooms existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Islington North ranks 118 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation, placing it in decile 3, meaning it is among the more deprived constituencies in the country. English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency has 635 registered charities, Charity Commission Register, England and Wales, and received £42.9 million in total grants, 360 giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics produced by Blocked Britain.